This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello, we're the Kransky sisters on Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That, Joy 94.9, with Chris,
Gordon,
and Phil.
And we will just do all our little knobs and buttons and everything, and let's say thank you to the band,
yes.
And they can tinkle away in the background.
Don't let the door hit their backside on the way out of the studio.
Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. Thanks very much indeed. Snow Dancing is the name of that song.
Well, you wouldn't have been doing that in the last few weeks, would you? Snow Dancing. Unless you were overseas,
but
the Northern Hemisphere.
Well, no, there was snow dancing here.
Was there?
Well, I didn't see any.
Snow Dancing.
Snow Dancing.
No?
Well, there was a lot of dancing in the street.
Yes.
Last Saturday night, and then again on the TV on Sunday night.
Yes.
I don't know that I could have been up there. I did my 3 years pilgrimage to Mardi Gras march, but I think that was something for when I was 10 years younger than I am now.
Did you march?
Oh, no.
Oh, I did. I did three marches.
Was it marching or was it dancing along?
Oh, we were sort of individuals running around, getting involved with the crowd. I had so many kisses from men, it wasn't funny, and from women, and hugs from everybody. The Japanese particularly wanted to hug me.
Was this because of your Father Christmas beard?
No, I didn't have a beard then.
Would it make sense for our Pride Parade to change from Sunday morning to Saturday night?
I think it'd be difficult getting home after it, you know.
I like the symbolism of being out in the daylight.
Daylight, yes. So, yeah,
but I'm thinking there's less chance of heat stroke and 40-degree days on a Saturday night.
Well, this year we did it at 11 o'clock in the morning, our own Pride March.
And it was still stinking hot.
It was stinking hot, that's true.
But it was a bit cooler than it would have been at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when we would have been marching off, which is what the idea was. I'm not sure whether I really enjoyed the rebroadcast of it on the Sunday night. It was
It was fragmented,
wasn't it? Yeah, I just didn't go. Some reason there was no excitement about it.
The inserts were actually brilliant. Some of them were wonderful.
Oh, yes.
I think you were very impressed by the group of Arab speakers.
Yes, from Egypt.
Monsieur
Abib, who was SBS.
Yeah. And I think that was really brilliant and made me think, well, we've got Helm as a group here.
That's right.
For gay Arabs. Yeah. And I don't know how that's faring, but I hope it is faring well. They're really pushing it to get uphill, aren't they?
They really are. But it was, I felt some of the interviews were pretty poor with the different people that we had, that they had in the studio box where they were.
Some were a bit waffly, and some of the vox pops in the street were technically awkward.
You could hardly hear them.
Yeah.
Well, they were drowned out by floats.
Floats
going
in the background, yeah. But it was, if you're in the parade, it's absolutely wonderful, but you never ever see the rest of the parade because you're in your own little spot, and you come on and you see the people in front of you, the people behind you, and that's it. You don't see the Dykes on Bikes, for instance, or anything like that.
Vox pops are brilliant, but I think the camera needs to get down into the crowd as well.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what I did enjoy was the fact that they had the Indigenous people to open it with the Welcome to Country. I thought that was absolutely brilliant. And the Indigenous gay group that came in behind them, which I thought was about time that they did recognise that, which was great.
Yeah, the trouble with the Welcome to Country is we're turning into a non-smoking country and they're burning up the joint.
I felt that there was a lot of commercialism in the parade.
Mm.
I'm not saying they were commercial floats, but there were companies that were supporting their own staff and volunteers. Mm. There was a lot of government support in there in some of the floats as well. And I'm sure the cameras were a bit selective,
weren't they,
what they were showing to us.
But, Chris, it's also very good that the the companies admitted that they have their gay staff and want to support them. Which
pride
is
diversity.
That's right, which is absolutely lovely.
That,
you know?
That works now. That was a novelty 10, 15 years ago, but now it's implanted full-time in most of the big companies.
Well, companies would have been embarrassed to think that gay people worked for them 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You would have kept that under
you
the covers.
You probably would have got the sack if you were 20 years ago and came out as gay, mate.
Now, I can tell you there was a pink ceiling.
Oh, was there?
Yeah. Like there was a glass ceiling for women, there was a pink ceiling for gay people.
For gay people.
Mm. Well, they got rid of that at Qantas, didn't they?
Oh, stop
it. That little leprechaun at the top there.
Not to be sure. Yes, but I thought you were talking about trolley dollies.
Oh, no.
But the crowd were great. What
so
you saw
enthusiastic.
Them. They're enthusiastic. And it, as I say, if you're in the crowd, if you're in the march, it's a great experience. Yeah.
The other thing was that the political parties that did show themselves...
Well, one didn't.
Well, how was I going to express that? But you've just blown it, haven't you?
Yes.
They couldn't rally enough to put on a show.
No. Well, they did mention the fact that last year the Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, was there because it was actually held in his electorate.
Mm.
But this year there was no sign of Scott Morrison. And I believe...
Well, it was in effigy.
Yeah, it was in effigy, but I believe that the Liberal Party had a very hard job to rustle up enough numbers to make a float for themselves.
Yeah.
But the opposition had politicians from all over the country.
Yeah, apparently they did make an effort of getting a whole
group
bunch together.
Yeah.
It was a good way to bring into use again the word mob.
Oh, yes.
As the First Peoples did.
That's right.
The First Peoples
mob.
Yep. You have a mob of kangaroos, you have a mob of this, you have a mob of that. But as a collective name or noun for people, mob is the right name that they use for themselves.
I think they sort of had the gay mob or something, didn't they?
Yeah.
It was on their banner. Yes, I thought, how lovely. But it was just, it was great to see that happen.
But and that's just their term for family.
That's right.
Because what's his name? Young Isaiah Firebrace on whatever TV show he was on. He'd always talk about his mob there at Echuca.
Yeah. And it's great.
And it is an extended family.
Mm-hmm.
It's an indication thereof. That's brilliant. And there was a few, I mean, who was that short woman, about 50-year-old woman?
Oh, the one who's just jumped on our bandwagon, Minogwe.
Kylie.
Yeah, I reckon she's just making money off us.
Well, she was.
Although she hires a lot of us as dancers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, she has her entourage that is paid for and everything.
I thought it was rather interesting. The camera was on her as she was watching the first of the dancers of her group coming along. And they are such huge,
rather large drag queens. Yes,
but she embraced them though. She got in there
and danced with them. Yes, yes. Well, let's face it. The gay community have supported her all the way through. Everything she's done, the gay community are behind.
We can't
Kylie
get her out of our head.
And Danny, they've supported both of the Minogue sisters. And you give back what you get, I think. From the way that the money was poured into her coffers by the gay community.
And the support from the audience on the side of the road to the marriage equality shows that that was not a passing blip.
No.
The concept of Australia.
I don't know. We've still got that fight coming up too, though. I don't know whether that was mentioned about the religious. I think there was a thing about the religious thing coming in about the...
The
act.
I think as we speak, the concept of religious freedom is a very dark patch to step into.
Yes. Sort of.
Don't give them their freedoms. Look what they do with it.
Yes, yeah. But anyhow, that's
who else was there? There was an international gay artist.
Oh, well, there was Jake Shears, I thought, was there. Jake is part of the Scissor Sisters.
Yeah.
And he's out here. I think he's supporting Kylie. He's one of Kylie's support acts.
That's right, as they go around.
So.
But he said that he doesn't like dancing.
But he made this song.
You're on Joy.
Wake up in the morning with a head like what you done. This used to be the life, but I don't need no.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that, Joy 94.9. I feel as I've been dancing all night long with that Jake Shears and I song.
Oh, good.
I think the heat of the weekend last has got to my brain. A little bit melted in some of the corners.
Cooked.
Cooked, I think, is a good expression.
There's a reason why we're on radio and not television.
We're melted, yes. Can we have another witch, please?
Yes.
Our first one melted. This program, Been There, Done That, is about items of history and also people of history. Some icons, bicons and dicons. And in this little bracket, we're going to be talking about a couple of icons of the British comedical scene. Matt Lucas and also John Inman. But we're also going to be talking about a person who transgendered, who
very famous.
Yeah, very famous transgender person. You've just got to keep listening to find out who this particular one is. In our anniversary books, we've got this yellow.
Grace Brothers Men's Department.
Mr. Humphreys, are you free?
I'm free.
Forward, please.
Mind the door.
Whoops!
Are you being served, sir?
I'm Humphreys and I'm free.
Are you being served, sir?
What would you like to
see?
If you'd like some swimming trunks, we've got them plain or spotty. We've also got some see-through that really tan your
beachwear.
Oh, these again.
Bit of a cheeky fellow is John Inman.
Yes.
From Are You Being Served or Are You Being Swerved, as we used to call it in our family at one stage.
In the Grace Brothers department store.
and yes, I'm afraid you could find lots of people like Mr. Inman and Captain Peacock and Mrs. Slocum in the old-fashioned department stores where there was actually people there who were employed to serve you. It wasn't a self-service situation with self-checkout and all the rest of it. This was where they would, in fact, make sure that you made an appropriate choice with your colour selection, your size selection, and even other points of fashion.
And John Inman's character just loved to do the inside leg measurement. one of his favourite spots when he was selling. With Mr. Humphreys, measuring the inside leg measurement was always a bit of a riot.
But
he was, John Inman himself really didn't acknowledge himself as being homosexual. He just didn't, in his private life.
Well, he was born in 1935, so he was of an era where those sort of things were pushed aside.
And also the character that he played, Mr. Humphreys, he wouldn't be able to play that these days on television. It would be a stereotype that would be sort of
frowned upon.
There's another reason. Have you noticed the local fashion where the crotch of the pants is halfway down to the knees? So the inside leg measurement is redundant.
Well, probably
you don't want it anymore.
It'll be from your knee to your ankle then.
That's right.
But the other thing that made Mr. Humphreys or John Inman so famous was the fact that he was one of the best and finest pantomime dames working to capacity audiences through Britain. Now, pantomime dames is known as a cross-dressing situation.
They're a bit like drag queens, really.
They were of their era.
That is what they
but
really did.
But it was theatrical tradition, though.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
It wasn't for shock element
or anything. There was always a famous male comedian that would get dressed up as the dame.
And it continued from an earlier thing where there was no women
Shakespeare
on the stage.
No, there was never women on Shakespeare's stage.
And until Michael Jackson came along, Peter Pan was always played by a girl.
That's right, yes.
But see, he became Peter Pan and all went down the toilet from there.
But he was quite famous locally in Britain for his pantomime career. Yeah. Well, and it was helped along by his Mr. Humphrey's character as well.
But at the age of 11, apparently he made his professional debut at Blackpool's South Pier in the melodrama Frieda. He later said that he knew instantly that this was the only life I ever wanted. Mm. So being on stage and playing to people and getting their responses.
But he didn't become a very tall boy. No, he was quite small, you know.
But as he advanced into his teens, small and slight, the work dried up. And in order to earn a living wage, he became a trainee window dresser, eventually graduating to London, where he worked at Austin Reed in Regent Street. There, like the character he would one day play, he liked to pose in the window, struggling to keep a straight face as he flaunted a sign that said, "Available in other colours."
He had a wicked sense of humour, obviously, you know.
He did.
But, and he realised what he was, but he didn't want to admit to it, yeah.
But the whole pretense behind Are You Being Served was in the style of a French farce.
The innuendo about Mrs. Sugden's pussy, for instance, was always one that brought up a hell of a laugh. And then old Mr. Grace would come mumbling in, sort of.
You've all done very well. but he was a wonderful character. But yes, you're right, Phil. I don't know whether he would be politically correct these days.
Well, he wouldn't.
And it's probably a form of character that the rest of the gay community doesn't particularly identify with anymore.
Well, it's an old stereotype.
Certainly is.
But still, there are probably characters out there like him.
But he made a lot of money at it.
Well, a much younger British comedian was Matt Lucas.
Oh, Little Britain.
Well, even Matt Lucas has admitted that Little Britain was cruel.
But it couldn't be made these days. That's the thing. That was another show that wouldn't be made these days. Yet you were falling apart, laughing at everything he did, and he and Williams did. You know, it was just unbelievable.
And I think Matt Lucas was discovering himself as much as he was playing characters on stage, and he has now come to a comfortable stage in his own existence where he looks back, as you say, and feels remorseful or even guilty that some of the characters have been portrayed that way.
Well, he's only gay in the village. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it was brilliant. But
And that could actually happen, of course. You could be the only gay in the village, but you wouldn't be carrying on like he did.
And the other thing was that when he played the character in the wheelchair.
Oh, yes, that was totally out of character with anything that you would ever possibly want, but it was very cleverly done. And then Williams saying, "Oh, computer says no." You know. A friend of mine worked for Centrelink on the phones, and they had a directive came around that they were to stop saying computer says no when they got all these inquiries from people asking about their pensions and whatever happened. And but she said yes, the department had to send it around to tell them not to say computer says no.
The odd thing is that computers would rarely have come back with that actual response. It was funny because he'd made it up.
That's right, yeah. But it was not, you couldn't, the computer doesn't say no anyhow, you know, it's only answers you if you ask it to.
I guess what you're doing though is you've created a gag and then you carry that through the series.
That's right,
yeah. And every time you say it, it's funnier.
That's right, every time it becomes part of the lexicon of the English language actually now.
Almost as much as Mrs. Slocum's pussy.
Yeah, that's right.
She was mentioned just this weekend on TV.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was a very funny running
gag. By people who I would have thought were way too young to even know who she was.
Your pussy must have got very
cold. They must have been put in front of the TV as a childminder when they are young kids. Mm. Someone else who's having an anniversary at this time, on the 10th of March 1924, they were born. They were born as Walter Stott, and they grew up to be an English composer and conductor of orchestras and bands, and he was a very familiar and household name to listeners of a lot of the BBC comedies on TV and on radio. But
In 1972,
thank you, Gordon, he undertook gender reassignment surgery and became Angela Morley. Now, Angela Morley left England at that particular stage and went to live in the US. However, continued to work as a conductor and a musical composer. And who do you think she is? We hear you ask. There's lots of works where she's provided music backing to Star Wars.
She wrote a hell of a lot of music for Disney as well, really.
Yeah.
Because she did the Cinderella story as well. She
the Little that, Prince.
The Slipper and the Rose. She did The Little Prince as the and for that one. Then she also did Watership Down, the movie for Watership. She wrote the music for Watership Down. She was also nominated for 2 Oscars for the music that she wrote.
And she also did 2 entries for the Eurovision Song Contest, Ring-a-Ding Girl and Say Wonderful Things.
I'm just reading notes here, and this is sheer talent from birth. This sentence says, Morley was born in Leeds, Yorkshire in 1924. Played saxophone in a number of dance bands. Now, who can do that at birth? That's incredible.
Thank you, Philip. Yeah,
well, it's as written.
Child genius.
Well, obviously.
You're very observant about this. So there
well,
we
saxophone
have some,
would have been bigger than her.
Yeah. But fancy that you had been on as a backing band for a lot of ATV television in the UK, that you were fully occupied in your profession, and then you had this greater pull saying you're in the wrong body.
Yeah, yeah.
Just fancy that. Yeah.
But it didn't seem to stop her from being recognised as a huge talent musically, because she was asked to write all this other music. People realised that she wrote superb music for shows and for films and all this sort of thing. So it didn't seem to stop there, did it?
I think we forget, because music is put under everything these days, even when you've got a scene on TV or in the cinema of just a pastoral scene in the countryside, mountains, trees, water, whatever, there's a blooming orchestra playing away in the background.
Sometimes too loudly and you can't hear what's going on.
Exactly. You want to hear the birds tweeting sometimes. Yeah. But all this mood music had to be composed. It's not computer generated. And Angela Morley, that was her profession. And died at the age of what?
85.
That's not a bad life. That is not bad lives, plural.
Well, she was the first openly transgendered person to be nominated for an Academy Award, which is quite a claim to fame.
Yes, and her music still lives on. You can still hear some of her music played even today.
Watership Down. Did you ever?
That's the story of the rabbits.
What rabbits?
It's the Watership Down is all about rabbits. It's an allegory of life, but in the way of rabbits and how they. They're in their burrows and how they live.
Their social structures and behaviours. Wow.
That's right, yeah.
It was later to be used in the Telstra ad where the kid had to do his project.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the fence across the Nullarbor. And the father just said, oh, it's for the rabbits.
Oh, very good then. Thank you for that.
You're on Joy 94.9. Been there, done that with Gordon, Phil and Chris.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. joy.org.au for the world.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon, been there, done that, Joy 94.9. We're almost at the beginning of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival for 2019. It's on the screens from the 14th to the 25th of March. And it's a wonderful opportunity to again to see a worldwide collection of gay films, various themes, and the team, of course, at MQFF have done a wonderful selection again. We keep saying one of these days the Queer Film Festival will become redundant because there was no need to educate the young upcoming baby gays of what's possible in their lives.
But it's a good idea to have something portrayed as gay people for young people to appreciate that they're not alone, that they've got something to look forward to.
Definitely. Well, we know that the French community has their French Film Festival to keep their culture alive.
Mm.
Same with some of the other cultures around the world.
What defines a gay film? Is it a gay filmmaker or gay subject?
Or
gay actors.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it can be any or all of that.
I think most of the films that they make have got gay stories to them, gay themes to them, but it has to be themed.
Coming out,
either gay or lesbian or transgender, it has
and
to be that.
As way. I'm usually the pedantic technical one, should we be using the term film?
Oh.
Because I just happen to know the guy who runs the theatre on Wilson's Promontory.
Yes.
And they don't have film. He says what movies he want, and they send him a thing like a brick, self-powered memory pack.
Yeah.
And it's all digital. He just plugs it into his projector.
Yep. I think that's what they're doing.
So it's not a film.
Not film at all.
It's not a plastic roll of
cellulite.
Celluloid.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Celluloid got removed. Yes.
You've got to get that out of your body. But celluloid, it doesn't have to have that anymore because they can do it onto cameras and digital appliances, so that's it's still a movie. Then you probably call
it's
it a movie,
but it's very nice to see that we're not wasting all that plastic.
Oh yes, on
film.
But what they're actually doing now is they're transferring those films onto hard drive
into digital format.
Yeah,
exactly.
We've just got to keep remembering that as technology changes, let's not forget how to read those films.
And coming up on the television, I'm not sure when. They've got old Australian film that was black and white, and they've colorized it.
Oh, yeah.
It's coming on television.
Now, that's a bit
very
spooky.
Shortly.
That's
very
a bit
shortly.
Spooky.
I was in America where the TBS network started doing that to all the classic films.
Oh, God.
And it was not universally accepted.
I don't want to see Casablanca in color.
White House? That's what Casablanca
means.
Yeah,
that's right, but that was a classic.
Well, let's not discuss the White House because of the current occupant.
Oh, all right. Okay. What are you going to look forward to seeing at this?
Well, I've got 10 films lined up, but one of them that I am going to go and see is in respect of a person who died on the 9th of March, 1989, and that's Robert Mapplethorpe, the US photographer, born in 1946. But he had a series of photos of gay sex and erotica, gay subjects, in the 1970s, and he created his reputation with such shock and controversy.
Can I point out the 1970s gave us the Brady Bunch? That was the mentality of America, and this guy had in-your-face gay
symbolism.
Content.
Yeah.
And he was banned from town to town to town.
From gallery to gallery to gallery,
yeah.
Actually. Yes.
And there's actually a film made about this one town where they accepted his work, got through the court system and actually got to present it, and all the protests and everything that happened right through the showing. And it's just, it's the same sort of issues that we're fighting now.
Mm.
The single-minded, narrow-minded masses too scared to expand their... their little white
bread. Well, I have read his biography, which is a lot of reading. It's a fairly thick book.
Mm.
And his whole thing now is being kept alive by his mentor that provided him with the money and the finances to start with, who was one of his lovers, apparently, for a while. But Mapplethorpe was one of those people that only ever, well, basically used Polaroid cameras so he could get the shot that he wanted straight away.
Yeah, his art was very... high contrast, and
well, of course,
not at all shy.
No, not at all shy.
Didn't fade away from the issue.
Yeah, but it's a very interesting life. If you really want to read about how somebody absolutely bucked the system, read the Mapplethorpe's biography.
And I've got to bring up The Simpsons.
Well, which, yeah, what did they say about?
Well, they were in the library, and Homer and Marge were trying to find the book on erotic behaviour that they could, you know, take home and, you know, learn from and practice. And the kids were coming around the corner, so they both had to grab a book. And Homer picks up this rather large picture book opens up and it's Mapplethorpe. And the only way you could describe the noise was a very high-pitched scream. That, like that.
These photos were very confronting at times. Very, very confronting. And Patti Smith, woman that lived with him for a long, long time, Patti Smith, that's the singer who's just been here in Australia late last year, I think it was.
She's quite a character.
Yeah, she's a character
in her own. Not the girl next door.
In her own right, she was a character, yes, when she was living with Mapplethorpe.
I think it was Molly Meldrum went to New York to interview her, and she was in bed with a man making whoopee.
Oh, right.
They invited Molly in and didn't stop.
Oh.
Well, Molly said, well, I'll just talk to you while you're doing it.
Oh, I thought you meant join them in the bed.
No. He interviewed them.
Interviewed them while they were... Well, they have to have a rest between...
But you're correct, Phil, in when you say that the mores, the morals of humanity have changed over the 50 years since the 1970s.
Well, we still have barriers or limits. There was a guy...
But I... Can I make a difference between Australia and the US? US, they airbrush out lots of things that we still allow on our screens and in our minds and in our billboards on the street.
Yeah, but we draw a line. I don't know the artist, and I think he was Australian, but he had child nude models. But we drew the line with that. Whereas he would argue that that is art, the way that Mapplethorpe would have argued.
Mm.
But are we hypocritical, or is it... These were not sexual acts.
No, that's right. And, of course, the model child that was in those photos, the parents had given permission, and they were there while he was photographing them.
Yeah.
So that nothing went on.
So do you think art will ever allowed to be just art, no matter what it is?
But, Philip, you've got to remember that art... through the centuries, has always been criticised. Look at what they had to do with statues of Michelangelo's David. They had to put a fig leaf on his penis because it wasn't the right. They didn't want him to see. Well,
that'll get wet when he pees. That's just not practical.
And there were all sorts of things like that.
Here's Miguel Brown. He's singing about something that Mapplethorpe probably had, you know, so many men, so little time.
Oh, God, yes.
Here on Joy.
Listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris, Phil and Gordon. Been there, done that, Joy 94.9. It was about 50 years ago that Stonewall brought a degree of reality to the US, and we've just had our Mardi Gras where we've been displaying some of our successes with equality here in Australia. And we had our own Pride March earlier in the year where we had our own Victorian good luck displayed.
Stonewall was 1969.
Yeah.
And it seems a long time ago, but at the time it was absolutely amazing because it was the drag queens that actually fought back against the police. The police were going to shut down Stonewall, the bar, because they were paid off. They would walk in there and the boss would have to give them the person that had a brown paper bag with the reddies in it, and something happened and they didn't pay it, and the police decided they were going to do something, so they came inside, but the drag queens went outside and they locked the doors, so the police couldn't get out, and the drag queens were out there, and they sent out a message on a quick message via phones or something, and the next thing you know, there was a whole crowd of people stormed down to the Stonewall Inn. And the police couldn't. They tried to get out, and every time they tried to get out, the drag queens were belting them.
It was essentially the last straw. They'd had enough of the harassment.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and they stood up for themselves. And from then on, it became a thing that they would be able to do certain things without doing anything else.
But it's taken that 50 years to trickle down to us here in the street, where we can now march with the police in a parade.
Mm.
Whereas 20 years ago, you would have had a completely different reaction from the police. It's a recent change in our world.
It's a generational change.
Yeah.
And it removed an attitude within their society, as much as it removed it from the general society, that we were outcasts.
Can I tell you something that I saw on a television program about what happened in Sydney in the 70s and what have you, when being gay was a criminal offence, and there would be gay people would get dressed up in drag. They were not allowed to go outside in women's clothing, but as long as they had 1 foot on the step of the house and 1 foot on the pavement, the police couldn't get them because they weren't completely on the thing. They could stand there in the doorway with both feet on the premises steps or whatever, and the police couldn't do anything about it. And they baited the police a lot with doing that sort of thing, you know. But it's very interesting.
But that was the local laws
in New South Wales, yes.
But yeah. Homer Simpson has a phrase which he uses whenever he's in a protest march. And he says, "We're here, we're queer, get used to it." And Lenny asked him one day where he got that from. He says, "I heard it in the annual Mustache Day parade."
On this same program, they're talking about how the wonderful parties that they had in private houses. Well, I can remember that in Melbourne. We used to have parties every Saturday night. And it was in an apartment down in East Melbourne. And every Saturday night was out at our place. And we had the most fabulous parties. It was absolutely incredible. In fact, we had Channel 9 there one night recording it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But once again, I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that that's where we came from.
That's right.
And this is where we are now.
Yeah.
And there are still things ahead of us that need to be resolved. And hopefully in our favour.
There are a certain number of society that would like us to go back to the 70s.
Oh, yes.
But if you look how we achieve things now, we don't have to reach the point of outrage.
Mm.
Whereas I can fully understand in 1969 that was the straw that broke the camel's back, and I'm very glad that happened because that's made it easier for the rest of us since then. But we got marriage equality by pointing out the inequality and the unjust state of affairs, and we didn't stop until we got it. So we can't drop the guard now because we've got other issues with the church and what it's allowed to do to our society and not to the rest of society.
Well, yeah, the Christian
and
lobbies.
We've also got those so-called do-gooders that reckon that they've got conversion therapy to solve our illnesses, which are not illnesses.
Well, see, we're going to have to cure other people's insanity to stop that.
Yeah. But fortunately, we've now got, in respect of HIV/AIDS, an advancement there in medications that is stopping things in their track until we find the next little break in that particular wall of safety.
Getting back to Mardi Gras, we had a thing about the HIV epidemic and how they were discussing PrEP then about the pills that they can now take. So U equals U. Yeah, and that was, which is absolutely wonderful.
The other thing is that education in schools, or should it be in schools, or could it be outside school environment? Schools are a teaching environment, and long as the teachers are allowed to indicate what is happening in the outside world, which includes us, then they're not doing anything that they shouldn't be doing.
Well, once again, when I was working at an all-girls college, I went into one of the classrooms one day, and up on the whiteboard, they'd been talking about HIV and infection and how it was spread and all the rest of it. This is to the girls' college, and that was right in the middle of the heyday of the thing, you know. And so I thought, well, at least the girls here are getting a bit of education.
Yeah, well, there's a chance now that there are kids in school who will know friends who have got two mummies and two daddies, and or
yeah,
yeah.
And
Well, that was one of the good signs of the Mardi Gras March, seeing the dads.
Oh, the dads with their children.
Walking along with the kids the on mums. Their shoulders yeah. and the mums with the pushers.
Yeah, that's right.
And so it's already normal in their own personal lives, and they need in school to learn that this is just another part of normality.
Well, another part of normality was that little report that we saw from the US where a particular airline company is now offering neutral bookings options when you put in your data for buying an online flight. Previously, there was just the binary.
Well, I'm not against it, but I don't fully understand because I've never bought a boy's ticket or a girl's ticket.
No, neither have I. And all the times I've flown around the world.
It's part of just, the data matching, though, just, for security and suppose. Also for their planning.
But, but if they see something like Mr. in front of your name, you know, I think that's or Mrs. or yeah, Miss, but then that would be enough.
You've got to remember that there's cameras everywhere, and if you're wearing your best party frock and your best wig...
Oh, I do it all the time.
I know. then they're going to look and think, well, is actually this the bomber on board, or is it... So I can see there is a particular reason. But now that there's the X option where you can not tick a box...
That's right.
Then
or on a passport... It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, on a passport, your mugshot's there. But once again, for your actual booking, when you're going to walk onto the aircraft, if you're not as per your picture, they start to pull you out of the queue and they lift your bags off the plane.
But so you'd get a passport as a non-binary person looking the way you want to look. The, not a particular gender, I don't know what... I'm extremely unqualified on this subject.
I think most of us are too when it comes to airlines.
Some passports now can be or issued in the third option, but it's not universal.
No.
So I don't know how you get on if you're in your other gender when you arrive at the other end and they say, what's this?
It's like you get on and you go into the toilet and change to your other gender halfway through the flight and get off.
I don't think you're that non-binary.
Gordon, that is... provoking things, I think.
It would certainly cause a stir when you went back to your seat in the plane.
You're thinking of take a walk on the wild side.
Good on you, Lou Reed.
Looks about time for us to go. So thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we'll catch you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
Love radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Turn us on anywhere.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.